The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning. And it is a beautiful morning out there. Welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. Reverend Larry Pierce is our minister. I am Jeannie Henderson, a 30-year member of this fellowship. Our building is located on Ridge Pike in Collegeville. However, during these times, we have been celebrating services in your home through Zoom. Whether we meet in our building or online, we welcome you. We welcome you, whoever you are, whatever your background, wherever you are on your spiritual journey, whatever your gender, identity, expression, or whomever you love. We welcome you into our circle of love, compassion, and joy. If you are a newcomer, we invite you to sign our online visitor's card. This card appears online in chat. You can fill it out anytime during the service. If requested, we will send you our email newsletter and provide you with information about our congregation. We also invite you to join us for our virtual coffee and conversation social following the service. Just press chat. This morning, we give our Thomas Paine Women center stage. We will move beyond the history book facts and present the more recent history of a few of our women. All too often in society, women's voices are and have been ignored. And sadly, their work has been dismissed, understated, or belittled. Women have given much, but have remained in the background, the strength behind the scene. Therefore, this morning, we will celebrate our women, celebrate them, their past, their achievements, their passions, and their endeavors. As we honor women this morning, let us reflect on our first three principles. The first Unitarian Universalist principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, calls on us to move words spoken on our lips into words of compassion. Our second principle, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, calls us to action and to take responsibility in our daily lives. Our third principle, acceptance of one another and encouragement in the spiritual growth of our congregation, reminds us that we are a collection of individuals bound together in community who can grow and love in spiritual embrace, accepting the diversity and complexity that enriches. Linda Stauffer will now light the chalice.
Good morning. The chalice, alight with flame, symbolizes our UU religion. Liberal religious faith. Today we light the chalice to bring light into dark where women have been far too long, to shine light upon women whose accomplishments have been eclipsed, to illuminate women's voices that have been silenced, to highlight women whose gifts have made us strong, to make the invisible visible. After we light the peace lamp, Karen McCann will speak.
And now I will light the peace lamp. Your response will be, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us and with all the people of the world.
Good morning. I was asked to reflect on empowerment. I remember a conversation one day with my father, shortly before I graduated from high school, about what I was going to study in college. What did I want to be in life? What were my career goals? I talked to him about his very successful career, and he said, "What about your mother's career?" I said, "What career? She stays home all day. She doesn't even know what's going on in the world." After a pause and a look, my dad went on to describe how my mother ran a company, the household being the company. Mother took care of the house, the outside chores, at times including the farm animals. She got us off to school with healthy made from scratch breakfast. She cooked every meal. She canned fruits and vegetables. She took care of the household correspondence. She was PTA president for many years, and she was a den mother for a Cub Scout pack. She engaged her people skills in a startup group called FISH, which was the first telephone helpline in the Philadelphia area. Mother did all the background work for several square dance clubs that both she and my dad called for. She did all the wash and threw a wringer washer, no less, in those early days. She made sure they were never in the red, as they had lived through the Depression together and knew how to scrimp and save. As for me, having grown up with two older brothers and always wanting to be a boy, that conversation that day really opened my eyes and empowered me to go on and be a success in my own life, happy to be a female. And now I'd like to introduce our gathering song, Standing on the Shoulders, by Joyce J. Rouse, also known as Earth Mama. And words will appear on your screen.
Standing on the shoulders of the ones who came before me, I am stronger for their courage, I am wiser for their words. I am lifted by their longing for a fair and brighter future. I am grateful for their vision, for their toiling on this earth. We are standing on the shoulders of the ones who came before us. They are saints and they are humans. They are angels, they are friends. We can see beyond the struggles and the troubles and the challenge, when we know that by our efforts things will be better in the end. They lift me higher than I could ever fly, carrying my burdens away. I ones who came before me, I am honored by their passion for our liberty. I will stand a little taller, I will work a little longer, and my shoulders will be there to hold the ones who follow me. They lift me higher.
Hi, I'm Karen Kaiser. When I was asked to contribute to the service, I wasn't sure, and to be honest, I'm still not sure if I'm the right person to do this. Within the past few years, I've realized that I no longer identify as female, rejecting ownership of any gender. There are multiple reasons for this, but ultimately it boils down to being tired of the societal restrictions placed on who a female is allowed to be. It's hard to know where to begin with this, so I'll start with my college internship. I was an excellent student, making Dean's List every term and ultimately graduating summa cum laude with a degree in accounting. Induction into a business honor society was already on my resume when I took on this internship. So understandably, I came to this job with high recommendations from my academic advisor. Another intern, a male, was hired at the same time. The tasks we were assigned couldn't have been more different. He was set to work right away with a job of programming spreadsheets. My duties were limited to filing, stuffing envelopes, and then running them through the stamp machine in the mailroom. To add insult to injury, even though I complied to the letter on the dress code requirements, my boss told one of the female employees to give me makeup tips because my face wasn't presentable to clients. Somehow, amazingly, unlike every female employee there, every single male was born with natural beauty. Men had uncomfortable dress code requirements too. But I want you to really think about the psychological impact of being told that the face that you see in the mirror every day isn't suitable to be seen in public. How do you think that feels to be told over and over throughout your life that the face you were born with is somehow offensive to customers? Fast forward a number of years down the line, I was hired to manage an accounting department of a small medical supplies distributor. During the interview, I was told that I was taking over the position from a male employee who had no background, neither experience nor education in accounting. He had been a file clerk, and I guess this was good enough to get the job. And he had messed up the books terribly, to the extent that the company's independent auditor was a bit alarmed. Now, there was no evidence of fraud, just incompetence. Taking over an accounting office gave me a bird's eye view of the whole operation, including the payroll history. My salary was considerably less than my male counterparts. I worked there for several years. My salary when I left was still lower than his starting salary. Let me repeat that. My ending salary was less than his starting salary after I'd been there a number of years. When I think back on my experiences at both these jobs, I have to ask, why was there such a discrepancy in my perceived value? I either got paid less or was given tasks that didn't reflect what I was trained to do. And then I think about those makeup tips and I figured it out. A woman's value is not in what she can do. It's in what she looks like. I feel like I was born with a tag labeling me for ornamental purposes only. I have found that this label not only negates the value of my abilities, but also my opinions. This is a lesson I learned quickly back in the 1990s when the internet was young. Females are not expected to have opinions, and when they do, their motives are suspect. I tried to contribute to a discussion about my favorite band, critiquing an album that they had released, only to immediately be told that I probably only wanted to sleep with the band members, and then I was promptly labeled a groupie and a slut just for offering an opinion. I came back to the group later with a male name and offered the exact same opinion and was able to participate in an intelligent conversation. I watched as other female contributors were treated the same way as I had been. Now, the question of my gender identity is far more complicated, and the rest of that story could be an entirely different conversation. But I would be lying to you and lying to myself if I didn't admit that a large part of my rejection of the concept of gender revolves around the consequences of being born female. being told it is not socially acceptable and certainly not professional to show my unadorned face in public in the full light of day, not allowed to have my opinions worthy of being taken seriously, not allowed to have my proven accomplishments acknowledged, not entitled to be paid the same as a man in the same field, even when my credentials are better than his. I was struggling to come up with a closing paragraph for this because I wanted to end on a positive note. So I will wrap this up by announcing to you that you will now be treated to the amazing talents of Christine Perry, who will sing her original song, Life, and afterward Gina will tell her story.
I made big messes with blocks and with Barbies. Mom told me to have them all cleaned up by bed. She kept the big house clean and did all the laundry, made cookies and gardened and still kept her head. Yesterday, as I sorted the mail and I looked at our house and the piles of papers, my husband, the pack rat's to blame. So I pleaded with him to pick up the mess, and I thought of my mom and her life at my age, and I realized it's really the same. Life, this is it. Life, this minute. Mine, what is it? It's here, I'm in it. We lived in the country, Mom taxied us round in the blue station wagon 1969. She drove us to 4-H and friends' homes and skating, and managed to have every dinner on time. Yesterday, as I drove home from work, and I stopped for gas, and I stopped for milk, and I fumbled with keys at the door. Then I whipped up a creation to serve to my family. I thought of my mom and her life at my age, and I realized there need not be more. Why do I feel there's somewhere to get to? Why do I feel I haven't arrived? How do I think it will look when I get there? Isn't it enough to know I've survived? Life, this is it. Life, this minute. Mine, what is it? It's here, I'm in it. Mom's career had a 15-year hiatus. Sometimes she waitressed while I was in school. She served on committees at church and led Girl Scouts, which at the time I didn't think was too cool. Through all these years, as I tried to make music and tried to write and tried to get gigs and said, when will I have a career? And I kept on going to work every morning. I thought of my mom and the life that she had, and I realized there's nothing to fear. And I realized I'm already
good morning. I am Gina. My story today begins in the year 1976, July 4th, at a party for graduate students in mathematics at a research university. A volleyball net is set up, and interested students gather, and we divide into two teams. The men vastly outnumber the women in the department, and so it is for volleyball. We begin playing, but when a ball approaches a woman, a man rushes over, the woman steps to the side, and the man volleys the ball back across the net. Me, I'm not moving. I want to play. So when the ball comes my way, as I get ready to hit the ball, out of the corner of my eye, I can see a man running towards me. The obvious happens. The force of a heavier running man knocks me to the ground. Now, this doesn't happen once or twice or three times, but more like 6, 7, or 8 times. Finally, the men get the idea that I'm not moving, and they allow me to hit the ball when it comes my way. By the second game, I am the only woman playing. However, no one ever passes me the ball. At one point, when the server keeps passing the ball to the man next to me, who continuously messes the play, out of frustration, I turn to the server and say, "Nathan, why don't you serve me the ball?" He does. I spike the ball over the net and score a point. No matter, the server once again passes the ball to the uncoordinated male player, who once again fumbles the play. Now, although I play well when I get a chance, in the men's eyes, I am invisible. I tell this story. It's a true story, because this game illustrates what can happen to a minority within a majority. Besides, what happened in that game was so obvious, no one can tell me that I'm too sensitive or that my imagination is working overtime. In that volleyball game, the men's focused determination narrowed their vision. They saw and played with each other, but they did not see me. Now, true, I was a graduate student at a time in mathematics when males could loudly and publicly declare that women do not belong in mathematics. And I had one such professor, and I wanted desperately to prove to him that women could do mathematics. So when we had a take-home exam, and because take-home exams are more difficult than in-class exams, I was determined to hand in a perfect exam. So the night before it was due, I discovered a tiny logic hole in one of my proofs, and I could not find a quick argument to close the gap. So what to do? I dumped my proof into the trash and started from scratch. I began with the basics and built my argument. When my exam was returned to me, a neat red X sat next to my proof, and after the proof, the grader had scribbled, "Only correct proof in the class." The professor, after handing out the exam, apologized to the class. He had accidentally put a problem on the exam that with our current knowledge, we couldn't solve. He continued, "Although the grader claimed that Jean had the only correct proof, that's impossible with your knowledge." The professor had not even bothered to read my proof. 2 days later, I knocked on his office door. It was his office hours, and I asked him to please help me find the flaw in my logic. After I explained my proof to him, he was silent. He then waved me out of the room. "Go to class, go to class." In class, I joked around with my classmates until the professor arrived 5 minutes late. He then put my proof on the blackboard, turned to me and said, "Good job." But did I show him that I could do mathematics? No. Just like that volleyball game, after I scored a point with my spike, business as usual. Poof! I was once again the invisible woman. I did complete my degree at that institution, but many years later, when I was teaching nights at our local community college and with three children at home, my yearning to learn more mathematics tugged at me. But invisibility had taken its toll. First, mathematics is tough on anyone's ego. Stay with it long enough, mathematics will challenge you. But more insidiously, a community's viewpoint of a group of people can impact self-image. Positive acclaim grows self-confidence. Negative eats at it and grows self-doubt. And by this time, I believed that I wasn't smart and that the only reason I could do mathematics was because I worked at it long and hard. But something else happens when a community gives favor to its own. Besides the confidence gap, the skills gap widens. The favored ones are mentored. They have opportunity to gain and fine-tune skills, to be tested, to recover from failure, and then continue on with applause from the sidelines. So therefore, I decided to continue my studies at Bryn Mawr College, a women's school with rigorous academic standards, high expectations, and a commitment to women's empowerment. The founders, Quaker spirituality, imbues the school's expression of its mission, the belief that equity and inclusion cultivate student empowerment. And this is very similar to my own UU values. Women faculty from diverse backgrounds across all academic departments serve as role models. In class, women speak. We hear our voices. We are challenged. We take risks, fail, and recover. We are mentored and have opportunity. And we are encouraged to work together and lift each other up. In doing so, one becomes more aware of other people, their talents, gifts, and skills. For example, you might discover that that disorganized person with poor communication skills is a brilliant problem solver, or the quiet person who struggles somewhat with the mathematics is a skillful writer. But something else happens. You discover your own strengths, that you can improve your weaknesses. You become comfortable with who you are. Mutual respect builds self-empowerment. Now let me pause for a minute. I am airbrushing my experiences at Bryn Mawr College because I did have dark days, and the support of my family and friends kept me going. In fact, one of these friends, our worship leader today, Jeannie, her words to me recharged my energy on an especially low day. I am forever grateful to Jeannie. Okay, back to school. I worked hard in my courses, passed my exams, found a thesis advisor with a current research problem to solve. Yeah, I still had doubts about my ability. I kept asking myself, can I solve this research problem? Can I do it? Can I do it? Can I do it? Then one afternoon, it occurred to me that I was asking myself the wrong question. The question I should ask myself is, how do I solve my thesis problem? Not can I? I had resurrected my childhood self-confidence. So happily ever after, almost. My educational experiences served me well, and I enjoyed successful work both in teaching and aerospace. Then came 2008, the economic collapse, and my department in aerospace crumpled. I was transferred to another department. There, once again, I faced the invisibility issue. Only this time, the men, a group of tightly knit managers were 100% aware. They purposely set out to render me invisible. Since I was not going to let that happen, the story gets ugly. So without going into details, I brought their actions to the attention of human resources. HR abjugated wrongdoing, which only intensified my manager's actions. My emotions, rage, red boiling rage. And then I understood race riots, the pent up rage ready to erupt at any provocation. My last words to my higher up manager were, and this was only because he had told us employees that his religion was his priority. So I pulled out my self-righteous pedestal, stepped up on it, and said, "I don't know how you sleep at night knowing how you treated me." And I finally concluded that to you, I am the other. I'm not part of your group of humanity. You must believe in a God who only includes a small group of people. But my God's eyes, we're all God's children. So let's return to volleyball. The scenario when people do not purposely narrow their vision and hearts. I've often asked myself, when have I been so focused on me, what I wanted to do or say, or was so unaware of my behavior or biases that I didn't properly acknowledge another? At TPUF, we all wholeheartedly believe in inclusiveness, but for human beings, this is a challenge. And I pose this question. It's a question I often ask myself. How do we, as individuals bound together in community, escape a mindset of preconceived perceptions and unconscious behaviors so that we see another person, invite another person, someone who is different from us in some way? How do we encourage each individual to become visible? Not visible within a category, but visible as a human being. And this speaks to our three UU principles. And from my experiences, these principles do speak a truth. Equity and inclusion cultivate empowerment, which in turn, and this is very important, ignites deep understanding, innovation, and positive change. Thank you for your time. And now I pass the spotlight to our one and only Adele.
Good morning. Jeannie, it was a pleasure. But clearly at my age, I've had lots of frustrating or amusing events that reminded me that people don't take women very seriously. You can be grateful that I'm also at an age where I don't remember most of them. So I'll just talk about a few highlights. Fresh out of graduate school with a master's degree in physics, I taught physics at the Philadelphia Community College. A number of my students had gone to a special high school, I think it was called Boys High in Philadelphia, where they had taken physics with the same physics teacher. After exams, my students would argue that I had something wrong on the exam. Anyway, this high school physics teacher had taught them a way of solving the exams without really thinking about what they said, just finding the numbers to plug in. And they couldn't understand that there were occasions when he was wrong and I was right. And time after time, the department head, who was an engineer, not a physicist, corrected them. Then I asked an unconventional question. I have always wanted my students to understand that the laws of physics are not an abstraction. I want to connect them to what they are learning, what I want to connect the physics they're learning to the real world. Well, in those days, nearly 60 years ago, most cars had bench seats. Anybody old enough to remember bench seats? Which you could slide along. So the question was, you're out in a car with your best girl. Yeah, they were all boys. And centrifugal force on your mind. Do you accelerate, slow down, make a fast right or a fast left turn? You might ask yourselves that too. Well, a group of very angry students went to the department head to complain. They were in with him a long time and they could hardly look at me when they left. I sat outside and waited. And finally, when they left, I went to his office and he asked me, would you mind if I use that question in my class? So I got out of that one not too badly. Another year, my students were convinced that I got the answers to my test questions for Physics 1, like I didn't know Physics 1, from the back of some textbook. They asked if they could bring me another physics book and watch me solve the problems. I shrugged and said, sure. I thought they would find something from a senior textbook and I would enjoy the challenge. But no, they brought me another Physics 1 book. I mean, really, did they believe that the qualification for teaching Physics 1 in college was taking Physics 1 in college? An amusing incident happened when I was in college. And it's certainly amusing from a modern point of view. I was taking E&M, that's electricity and magnetism. And my teacher wanted to show that he was a very sympathetic feminist. We were four young women in the class and many, many, many more young men. So when he was describing the way a magnetic field surrounds an electric current, he used the standard screwdriver analogy. You know, the field goes this way and you can point your thumb at the... And then he added for the four of us that it also works the way lipstick works. No kidding. Now we knew he had researched this analogy, that he was a very nice guy that we all liked, but come on now. Did he really think there was a young lady in an upper layer physics course who had never seen a screwdriver? I mean, for real. Please take these things as lightly as I do. They were all a long time ago and things have changed. We know our strengths even if men don't. And let's face it, in some days they have to come to us for the things we know because we know how a household works. Like I saw a fellow student when I was doing advanced graduate work at Carnegie Mellon. I saw him in the supermarket and we were both buying eggs. And I held the eggs and I just wiggled each one slightly. And I saw him there wiggling each one slightly. And I said, isn't that nice? His mother taught him survival skills for being on his own. And then he turned to me and said, what are we looking for? Incidentally, ask Gina about this, she knows. I was teaching at Stockton Tate. Sorry, I have to reprogram my mouth. I was teaching at Stockton State College in New Jersey. At that time, it was a brand new school. It was near Atlantic City, and I was an adjunct teacher. A new full-time position opened, and I applied. I received no response at all from my colleagues, even though I saw them every day, and asked about it. So I found a headhunter, got an offer from Raytheon at a 50% raise from what I had been earning, and I accepted the job. At the last minute, my colleagues told me that I had the job. They had failed to agree on anyone else who had applied and had taken it for granted that I would always be available if and when they needed me. I pointed out that I already had a job and accepted it. And one gentleman in the department, although gentleman is clearly not a good word to describe him, actually bawled me out. He yelled at me. He told me how they were all depending on me and I had no right to a life. Well, he didn't say a life of my own because that I had one would never have occurred to him. But he said they were depending on me as a fallback position and he actually yelled at me. I sat and listened and walked out. What was there to say? The other members of the department apologized for his reaction. but not for the actions that they had taken, assuming that they always had me as a backup. And then when they found out what money had been in the offer, they were very curious about the new job. I don't know how they handled the last minute emergency that they caused themselves, although I have no doubt they continue to blame me. I started my new job as soon as the semester was over, entered the computer world, learned on the run, because remember my background was physics, not computers, and had a wonderful career, traveling all over the world, teaching people how to use computers. So that's my story, and I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you. Now we're going to listen to a wonderful musical montage with outstanding slides, and I think you'll be very happy if you pay attention to this. Thank you.
You can be amazing, you can turn a phrase into a weapon or a drug. You can be the outcast and be the backlash of somebody's lack of love. Start speaking up. Nothing's gonna hurt you the way the words do when they settle near your skin. Kept on the inside and no sunlight. Sometimes a shadow wins. But I wonder what would happen if you say what you want to say. if you say what you want to say, then let the words fall out. Honestly, I want to see you be brave, but what you want to say, then let the words fall out. Honestly, I want to see you be brave.
I just want to see you. I just want to see you.
Montage. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. So next we will have a musical meditation, but before that, I'm going to talk about how we are doing Matters of the Heart now. We've changed it a little bit. And if you have something that you would like to say regarding the talks that people gave, the time to do that would be after the service. And for matters of the heart, it is a time to share significant joys or concerns. And we're asking that you share them in the chat, and then I will present them. We will have the meditation that you can think about it. The musical interlude, it's Let the River Run by Carly Simon. But you can start putting your comments in the chat right away, and then I will read them. Thank you.
I'm gonna let it shine. There's a little light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Yes, there's a little light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine, shine. There's a little light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. May we know that together. This little light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Everywhere I go. Everywhere I go. I'm gonna let it shine. Shine everywhere I go. I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go. I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine.
All in my room. I'm gonna let it shine. All in my room.
I'm gonna let it shine.
All in my room.
I'm gonna let it shine.
Let it shine.
Let it shine.
Let it shine.
This little light of mine.
This little light of mine.
I'm gonna let it shine.
This little light is a light of mine.
I'm
gonna let it shine. Shine,
shine. This little light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine.
Let it shine.
Bravo.